Welcome to the Three Film Egos. I'm your hirsute host, Isaac Jensen, and with me, as always, is Utah's whitest black child, Clayton Godby.
When was I drunk?
And our resident vegan dreadlocked Portlandier, Ryan Cragen.
Oh, it's fine. I don't give a shit. You know, I'm sure you guys had a great conversation without me.
This is a film discussion podcast where we each pick a film based on a predetermined theme or topic and then talk about anything but. There will be tangents. There will not be spoiler alerts. Consider yourselves warned. On this episode, Addiction.
So my pick, Under the Volcano, I really like for some reasons that are more subjective and some reasons that are more objective, but I feel like it deals with a really interesting character, a people's person, Jeffrey Furman, who has retreated to a small Mexican city and is just really out of control with his drinking on the Day of the Dead. And I like the reckless abandon of this character. I like his self-deprecating and self-defeating personality. And as you watch him go through this one day, which ends up being the last day of his life, you really feel for him. And it blew me away, some of the images and some of the dialogue I've found myself quoting. It's a pretty quotable movie. So it visually and thematically, it was just something that really hit me. And I don't know. I love the movie. So thought I'd pick it.
Yeah,
I've seen it twice now. And I think it's becoming one of my favorite movies just because it does have both those objective and subjective elements that you can, like, for me, having my experience with alcohol, I can kind of relate to in a really scary way, but also it can be used as a way to deter my own behavior in that regard, because I think this is probably the best representation of alcoholism I've ever seen in a film.
It's very extreme.
Yeah,
Albert Finney is
amazing.
I think what I found most interesting in this movie in particular is that it sort of shows you that addiction is actually a sickness, especially to alcohol. It's not somebody's character issue. I thought he was a really genuine, likable man, a good person, but he was genuinely sick. And I kind of like that, because when you have a movie that's some guy that's just drinking the entire time and just getting shithoused, you know, but he's trying to find that happy medium between drinking too much and blacking out and being ridiculous, or not drinking enough and getting severe shakes. So you kind of have to feel for the guy.
Yeah, you definitely have to.
He's in a tough spot. I think his one downside is that he's too afraid to confront, you know, to make those hard choices, to make the change. And I totally identify with that all the time.
It may not be that he's unwilling to confront those problems. It may be because he's so, you know, wrapped up in the depths of his disease that he's unable to. You know, it's like, I think most people who develop an addiction or develop a problem with alcohol or drugs, that's really more a symptom of a greater problem, a greater issue they have. But then that can develop into, like in this case, it is a disease. It has completely warped his mind to the point where it is physically and mentally necessary for him to function.
One of my favorite things about the movie is I think it kind of gives little clues and hints that about things that may have started his addiction, where it may have begun in the relationship with his wife, especially. It never really clearly says why she had left him and she returns to him on this day, but it never clearly says why she left him or why he's angry at her or why he's angry at himself or any of those things. It just shows kind of the product of that, some of the symptoms of that, and alludes to those things. And I like that. It feels legitimate, like he began drinking because of these problems, and now it's just roller coastered to a point where it's a part of him. And I like his line where he says, "I choose hell." You know, he's choosing this lifestyle and he's not making the changes that would be difficult to make, but he's at this place now and so much a part of him that he's given up hope. Kind of really, a really tragic story.
Absolutely. I thought the movie was genius too. I mean, sidestepping from the character and the theme, I thought it was very creative. I thought the opening scene with the skulls and the I don't know what those are, but the Day of the Dead kind of Mexican skulls. I thought it was original. I thought it was creative. I thought it was beautiful in a sense.
It reminded me a lot of The Seventh Seal, Ingmar Bergman, where I feel like that movie as well has just visual cues, things in it at all times to kind of remind you of death, of the idea of death, the end of life, and also the meaning of life. And I think that this movie was a little bit more subtle with it, or they're both pretty subtle, but that it reminded me of that, that with the skulls and the Day of the Dead decorations all over the town and everybody celebrating death and ghosts and grim things. It was showing kind of the death and grim things within the character that Albert Finney is portraying, and then also is great foreshadowing for the end of the film as well.
I found myself reflecting a lot about myself when I was watching this movie. And it's not because I identify with all of his struggles, but I felt that I definitely had a few things in common with the guy.
I think that's the genius of Albert Finney. Like, this is one of the best performances I think I've ever seen. I mean, alcoholic aside, it's just, he is so good.
Brilliantly played. Some of the smaller scenes that show everybody that wasn't him when he was so tanked that they were giving him a bath, for example.
Mm. Right.
And it just seemed so routine. You know, they seemed like they had dealt with this before. I don't know. It just felt a little too natural for everybody. It was kind of heartbreaking that a problem like this can just be so brushed aside. I kind of hoped that. I mean, I guess his friend is trying to make the concoction that'll get him off drinking, but I kind of hope that if I was that deep into something like that, especially the people that were closest to me that I love would help me, you know, a little bit more firmly. Try to escape this. I feel like they're aiding him in, you know, assisting this behavior.
Yeah, but you got to consider the era that this is portraying. It's from the late 30s, and the nature of addiction wasn't really well known. I mean, Alcoholics Anonymous had only been around for, I think, like 5 years at this point, which is something I discovered after seeing the film, thinking, why don't they make this guy go to AA? And then I saw that AA has only been around since the early 30s. This is 1938 in a foreign country. But, I mean, as far as the nature of addiction and how you're supposed to deal with addicts, I don't think that was common knowledge in the 30s. It's pretty much just put up with it because he's your family, so he's your problem.
Yeah, the idea of someone enabling, being an enabler, I guess, didn't come around. But I was kind of touched by those scenes where...
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, I was kind of like... Wow, these people care about him and want him to know that they care about him and to know that they'll help him in whatever way they can. I thought those were great characters, just showing the length that you'll go when, for someone that you love, doing what they thought was best for him.
How'd you all feel about the ending of this movie?
That was one of my least favorite parts, really.
Was a tragedy.
There's a,
for sure.
The tragedy of it, I love. Like, that's the only way it could have ended. That's the way I wanted it to end. It was mostly, there's a random gunshot, and his wife, Yvonne, is like, Jeffrey, like, somehow knows that he's been shot and starts running and then is hit by, or kicked by a horse, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
It seemed unreal. Like, a lot of parts of this were, like, painfully real. And that's why you identify with the character and you identify with some of the circumstances. But the ending of them both dying at the exact same moment, somehow knowing and being linked and dying together, was a little contrived to me. I kind of
thought so too. It felt like with Albert Finn, I mean, his character got what was coming to him in a sense, but to kind of force, yeah, the death of his wife, that did feel a little bit off. Like, maybe a better ending would have been, they hear the shot, they think, oh, you know, something's going bad. Let's run back up there and then maybe find his body. That might have been a better ending, maybe more tragic. But,
yeah.
I mean, this is based on a book, so that might be just straight from the book.
I wondered that as well. And reading up on it, I found that it's semi-autobiographical, which would be impossible with a death at the end anyway. But
right. Still,
I don't know, like, just from a story standpoint, it doesn't seem like if I was writing the story, that would have been the most logical way for it to go about.
It was just faking, you know. I mean, what he truly wants and has wanted for so long was his wife to come back. But he had been shying away from it the whole time with the letters. And then he ends up going to the bar and fucking some random whore. And she catches him and dies. And it's just... fuck, you know.
Yeah.
it's yeah. So sad. It's kind of hard to see, you know, what am I supposed to get out of this movie?
Right. Yeah.
You know, people have,
is it a cautionary tale?
and it hurts. No. But, you know, am I supposed to get, don't drink, you know? You're going to end up fucking somebody and getting shot.
I don't know that. Yeah, that's too simplistic.
I know.
I think it has really a lot more to do with understanding the actual impact we have on the people who love us and how our actions have consequences beyond ourselves.
Yeah, I think those are kind of the, I don't know, you put it into better words than I could, but I think those are some of the feelings that I felt as a result of watching the film. Wow, I have a responsibility when people love me not to make them bathe me.
Yeah, exactly.
Not to make them get kicked by a horse.
Yeah, I definitely felt myself just wanting him to interact with more people through this movie. My favorite scenes were just him with new people. I just wanted to, mm-hmm. I just wanted him to meet everybody in Mexico individually.
Like the British man who found him lying in the road.
In the street, and he has a conversation with him, and he gives him his backup booze.
The entire flask.
when he goes to seek out a drink and ends up at that bar with a lady, you know, the bottle shop, and his interaction with her was great. I don't know. I didn't feel like the ending really fit. I mean, I understand that he just wandered into hell, essentially, and he chose hell.
Hell is natural habitat, as he put it.
And so he wanders in there and dies, but it just didn't feel like him getting shot was really the right way to end this movie.
Well, I think the shooting was okay for me. It was other elements. I don't know. The guy just needed to die. I don't know if his wife needed to die.
I think the more tragic thing would have been his wife to die at his expense and him living, like a car accident or something that he caused because he was drunk. I think that would clearly state Isaac's, you know, overall theme, which is, you know, the effect of your actions definitely reflects on the people that you love and that love you. I just feel like him getting shot outside of a bar was just kind of a cop-out of an ending.
Possibly.
Yeah, I don't know if I necessarily agree. I mean, because if you think about it, if he got into some kind of car accident and it ended up killing his wife, that gives him the opportunity for redemption or change after the fact. Whereas I think at the point he's at when he gets shot, he's almost past the point of redemption.
Well, what if they both die? I'm just saying, I felt like something more naturalistic than getting shot would be a better ending.
They should have both been kicked by horses.
I just don't think that many people get shot. You know, maybe I just invested too much into this movie. I expected a different ending. It felt so real for most of it.
And it does take place in Mexico, and lots of people do get shot in Mexico.
Fair enough. And maybe more people
got
shot.
That's the moral. Don't go to Mexico.
Maybe I just don't know the period or the... Yeah, there you go. Well, if it was more realistic, he would have died because he was drinking the water in Mexico. Right.
Drinking the water. He died of drinking. Oh, no, not that drinking.
The water.
The water. It killed him.
Overall, though, I definitely want to watch this movie again.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, I could watch it several times. I'm probably going to buy it.
Yeah, I definitely think that this movie merits repeat viewing because I think it's, aside from stated dislike of ending, I think that the acting is brilliant.
Yeah, and so, yeah, speaking of acting, let's go on to Nvonda's room. The Portuguese film, I think 2000.
What acting is there to talk about?
Exactly, that's the segue. Is I think I'm pretty sure I read up a little bit more about it. These are all real people, and I think they are put in their real settings. Although I don't know how much actual manipulation is done on the part of the director. I don't know if he just documented things because I don't think this is technically a documentary.
No, this is not a documentary. I think this is staged in real places with real people, but it's definitely fiction.
Yes, although the shots of the characters, Vonda especially, and her, I think it's her sister, them doing heroin, that's real.
That is stellar, and I mean, I have seen people smoke heroin. And it's definitely legitimate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think it's because it's 100% legitimate because I think it's real.
There's something about movies where people are taking drugs wrong that really just pulls me out of a scene.
Yeah. Well, when you have an intimate knowledge of any kind of activity and then you see it on screen and it's not done properly, it takes you out of it.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've never been a junkie, but I definitely know that they're doing the proper.
Right.
I found that interesting about this is that they weren't actors and actresses, and they very, very well may have actually been performing the acts that they were portraying. They weren't really portraying them. They were just doing it and then being filmed.
That's, Yeah, that's well documented. That's actually happening. When you're seeing them smoke mm-hmm. heroin, they're smoking heroin. That's not staged.
That's an interesting concept for me. And when I hear about films involving sex scenes that are real or drug scenes that are real and all of that, it's always interesting to me to compare them to acting, to right. a different kind of portrayal of those actions. And I don't know if one's better than the other, but it definitely lends some gravity to the scenes when you know, wow, that's really going on. I'm really watching
yeah.
that.
I think the way he shot it makes it feel more documentary too, and sort of enhances the way that they are, you know, quote unquote acting, because the camera never moves in this movie.
No,
not at all.
And I picked up on it very quickly. We're not moving the camera this whole movie, I guess, you know, when you're 10 minutes in and you realize the camera's never moving. I don't know.
It's such a ballsy decision, because it's almost 3 hours long, and for a camera to have no
yeah.
movement at all, but to still keep you involved and riveted, that's a real testament to the subject matter.
I didn't feel like I was riveted in this movie.
Well, I spoke for myself with that regard, I guess.
Yeah, no.
I felt sort of connected to the characters, a little bit interested, but the slow pacing of it and the stagnant cinematography worked together for me to sometimes just be like, all right, dude, is something about to happen or something? I don't know if I'm just an American cinema watcher or what, but I didn't feel like it needed to be as long as it was, and I didn't think that it was helped any by some of the choices that were made in how to tell this story.
I'll probably agree with that.
Although, because of that idea that even if you took out half of the scenes in this, made it half as long, you could probably still get the same message across, have the same impact. So, I mean, this is all editorial decisions on the part of the filmmaker.
Right.
And for me, since I guess I've developed a tolerance for long, meandering films that don't really have a lot of action. So I found myself just totally entranced by this because of the... It's not necessarily original to not move a camera, but to use it this way, I thought was just... fascinating, like, because we're seeing a city fall apart around these people, like it's literally being torn apart, and I think that was more the focus of the film, as opposed to watching, you know, people destroy themselves. It's more watching the city be destroyed, like this part of, I think it's Fontainhas is the name of the city, it no longer exists. These are some of the last images of these parts of the city,
right? Yeah. So this is slums outside of Lisbon, right? Sorry.
Yes.
Yep.
So it felt real, and it definitely felt like an expose to different types of people and different types of living. But
right.
I definitely felt the pacing was a little slow. I felt like some scenes could have been cut shorter. Some were great, and I wanted them to go longer. Some scenes, nothing happened, but you just wanted to look at it. It was a good picture, and I understand why he cut to a specific scene. I recall one where a scene in a restaurant with a foosball table, and a guy is just sweeping up. And that scene
yeah.
has no... There's no reason for that to be there. There's absolutely no reason for it, but that's one of the ones I like the most. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll take that camera, watching a guy sweep. And then it just
yeah.
holds it after he's walked out of the frame for a while. I felt like some of those were great, but I felt like some of the scenes just dragged on. And I felt, I don't know, maybe I'm just desensitized, and so I've seen people smoke heroin before. So it's really not that shocking to me.
No, yeah, for me, the drug use was not shocking. It was
yeah.
more just the total disregard for life, I guess, involved.
Absolutely.
Like,
exactly.
Where you're tearing
like
a wall
just...
to somebody's house and kicking them out of a house, and now somebody has no house.
Yeah,
and
like,
I
let's just go find another place.
I think that's one of the things that I could defend the stagnant camera, just the sitting there and looking, is that it made it seem more day to day, and it made you feel, you know, this is routine. This is what Vonda does in her room. And an experience that's outside of myself, just like, and it made it routine and normal almost. It made it almost feel normal. You watch it happen so many times throughout the film that I think it makes that symbolism that Isaac was talking about the city is being destroyed and these people destroying themselves more apparent, just over and over going back to the same thing that's not helping any of the problems that are around them or any of the disputes in their lives or the arguments they have with their relations and with their friends, just almost reckless abandon and disregard and apathy for what is around them.
Yeah, and it kind of pushes that question, like, which problem came first? I mean, was the problem the drug addicts destroying the city, or is the city being destroyed causing the drug addicts?
To me, it seems like it was probably poor people, but poor people right. generally ingest drugs.
And then
I
the government decides to
yeah,
sweep it all, sweep the problem under the carpet.
Exactly. So they're trying to clean up the mess, so to speak. And I think, you know, what that ends up with is you're going to have junkies, and you're going to have crime, and you're going to have old sweet ladies that are just hanging out in a house.
And it just displaces them to other parts of the city, and then you've got new problems to worry about instead of addressing the real problems.
Yeah, I mean, some cities try to force all their crime intentionally into a slum to contain it.
Right.
Put the bad apples together and let them deal with each other. It's kind of,
so I don't know. Yeah, I don't know that this film was necessarily about addiction. It was about addicts, but I think it was also about the loss of humanity.
Yeah. Hopelessness.
Kind of involved with, I mean, on an individual level with drugs kind of destroying your life, but also on a more macro level where ignorance of these problems kind of, you know, it makes everyone involved kind of lose some dignity.
To me, it shows me that we've not found any workable solution to these problems that has been applied at a large scale.
Yeah.
This is not an ethical way to deal with the problem. No,
absolutely.
And I don't feel like the way that, you know, especially the United States is dealing with drug issues is anywhere close to ethical. So, I mean, in that regard, I think it opens up a little bit of eyes.
Yeah, me too. And I loved the final shot. And I knew when the shot started, it was going to be the final shot. It was just that it just was focusing on the remaining corner of a building that was just maybe like 3 feet tall, maybe 6 inches on each side. But that all that was left of what was there before. And I thought that was very poignant to the entirety of the film. Just stood there as a symbol for what everything that was gone now and what was left standing.
The thing's lost.
Yeah, not exactly a feel-good movie, this Under the this in Vonda's room.
2.5 hours of feeling bad.
I think it's more 3 hours of feeling bad. And so,
yeah, it's 10 minutes shy of 3 hours.
I think that's more why maybe Clayton and I didn't like it so much. I mean, there's only so much bullshit I want to go through with all at the same time, you know?
Whereas I'm kind of a masochist in that way.
Yeah.
Like I kind of enjoy being dragged through the mud a little bit because, you know, I don't really have any of that in my real life. So I like to sometimes escape to situations, you know, that are so far beyond my scope of reality.
I like that. Also, I like to feel something negative in a movie, but I feel like there are more interesting and engaging ways to do that than this film did. I don't think that's exactly why I disliked it. I like a good depressing film as much as the next guy, but this was depressing and a little bit boring. It was both.
Yeah.
I don't know. Stylistically, I really liked it, though. I felt like every scene to me was a painting, a moving painting, as opposed to a moving picture. And so each new scene was just a new addition to the collection.
That's an interesting way to view it.
That might be why I tolerated it a lot better than you guys.
It's not that I didn't tolerate it. It's just that I thought the running time was a little too long. I didn't think that some of the scenes were really required, you know, to really get the point across at all. I mean, there's only so many minutes that you're going to watch a building get torn down.
Yeah.
I mean, how many shots can we have of a building getting torn down and somebody smoking heroin and various people doing weird things and then doing drugs?
Exactly. It's what Isaac already said, is that I think the point would have gotten across and possibly just as strongly and poignantly if it had been half as long or even 2 hours or something like that. I think the point would have been made and it would have been just as good, possibly even better.
I feel like...
And that's a matter of opinion.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
I think he shot this movie over a long, long period of time.
I think it was a full year, if I read
correctly. And I feel like the director loved so many of these scenes. I feel like it was too much for him to get rid of some of these scenes.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, it didn't actually help his overall piece to retain
all
of
it. He probably had hundreds of hours of footage. And so to drop it down to less than three is probably a mammoth undertaking.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah. Not something I think I would ever purchase, but I could see myself seeing this movie again eventually at some point.
Yeah, I think I'd revisit it eventually.
I don't think
I need to revisit it.
Yeah, I don't think it's a must-see again, but in the right circumstances, I think I could probably get myself to watch this again for the right reasons.
Yeah, because I like the visual aspect of it so much. This is the kind of film that I think if I could put in a frame and hang on the wall and just play it over and over, would be the kind of thing I'd do.
That'd be awesome.
Just have a small TV that just plays this movie with a picture frame around it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my art on the wall. That's, you know, why not?
I'm doing that. Not necessarily with this movie, but I'm going to have a room with four TVs, one on each wall.
That is madness.
That probably won't happen.
Yeah.
No, it won't happen.
It definitely won't happen.
All right, I can't think of a good segue into Kids, so let's just move on to Kids.
Okay.
Yeah, Kids.
So I figured since the topic is addiction, we would probably have alcohol, we would probably have some sort of drug. So I chose Kids. Essentially, Kids is a movie about kids in New York. I don't know if I could place the age group. It's pretty variable, the age of these kids, but it's essentially the lead character is one kid that is HIV positive that is more or less addicted to having sex with virgins. His goal is
to... He even says that.
Yeah, which is to slay as many virgins as he possibly can. And so basically what we do is we follow him through basically a day in the life of his mayhem.
Yeah, he doesn't know he's HIV positive.
Right.
No.
But he does manage to sleep with multiple women one day, which is unfortunate.
I don't know what it says about me, and where, or maybe the state of media in general, but I wasn't as shocked by this film as I was kind of expecting to be.
Neither was I.
No, yeah, I wasn't shocked at all. And this is something that I feel like is almost the main objective of Harmony Korine in his movies. And this he didn't direct, but he wrote, is to shock. And I'm always put off by movies that I feel like the objective is to shock me. I don't like that. But I don't know. Yeah, I would agree with the both of you that it wasn't as shocking as it maybe tried to be, or maybe it wasn't trying to be shocking. It was
I didn't get that vibe at all. I didn't think he was trying to be shocking. I think he was trying to tell a story, but he was just trying to show a little bit of culture. I don't know if it was necessary to be culture. I think it feels fairly real.
No, I agree. Yeah. And I also wouldn't necessarily say it was to be shocking. I think it was more to call attention to real actual problems and real situations that young kids are actually getting into. And I think the reason I wasn't shocked is because now that, you know, kids are on the internet and are, you know, telling everyone on Facebook about what they're doing every weekend, I think this is all kind of stuff we've heard before pretty recently. But in, you know, back in 1995 when this came out, that wasn't out there. People weren't really aware of what their young kids were doing, or maybe in denial about it.
Well, I think this is kind of a culmination of a long time period. This whole culture that it's showing is definitely didn't happen overnight, and it shows that clearly. It shows, teenagers, but it also shows some kids that are probably what 8, 10 years old.
Yeah.
This movie that are getting involved in the same practices, that are being bred into this lifestyle, and it's becoming what life is supposed to be. This is the reality.
It was really effective of making that clear, of making that, you know, it would show some teen or like young teen kids talking about their sexual exploits and smoking blunts and stuff like that, and then it would cut immediately to 8-year-old little skateboarder kids, you know, smoking some weed. And I think that was one of the things I was trying to call attention to, is that, you know, we're creating duplicates of this behavior, or we're allowing that behavior to be perpetuated.
Yeah, to further that point, I mean, you look at the entirety of the film and there is almost no adult presence at all. There is only one scene with one parent who is, you know, watching her television show and only worried about whether or not they wake up the baby. And then the only other adult presence is the women at the AIDS clinic. Other than that, this is just kids, all kids. And so, the younger kids are learning from the older kids who probably learn from, you know, the kids older than them who are now young adults. And it's just perpetuating all these cycles.
Well, and it did have a message in the interaction with the mother as well, because his mother flat out tells him, I would give you money if I have any money. But he just had just barely come out of the room stealing money out of her shoes. So she has lied to her kid. And I think there was some message in that they were trying to make, you know, like your immorality or your dishonesty is going to bleed through in some way to your kids. You know?
Well, I think it was more about the negligence as opposed to the dishonesty.
Yeah.
You know, this parent has absolutely no idea what the kid is up to.
Not a fucking clue.
And it almost seems like she doesn't even care. I mean, as long as he says he's looking for a job, that's good enough. But she's not following up on anything. I mean, Sarah even reprimands him. He says he's going to go out tonight, and she asks when he's going to be home early, and he's like, I don't know, it's like not 4 o'clock like last night, right, or something like that. And it's like she doesn't even reprimand him. It's like, oh, that's just my kid being the kid. So I guess we could say this movie might be more about parents.
And kids.
Parents, the movie by Larry Clark.
Yeah, but at the same time, when I was a kid, I definitely did things behind my parents' backs that I didn't want them to know.
Oh, yeah. Every kid does. But, I mean, there's a level of involvement between none and too much. And I think when there's none, then things go haywire. But also, if there's too much, things go a little haywire, too. I mean, there just wasn't any balance.
One extreme.
Yeah.
And it's definitely a tragedy in that the one character that is probably the most cautious ends up being affected.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's multiple people that end up being affected that are very cautious, that are, more or less innocent.
Are we talking about Chloe Savini?
Chloe Savini's character, but then there was also the last one. Essentially, both the girls that the little shithead sleeps with.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah, the 13-year-old, the little sister of the guy.
Yeah.
What was her name? I don't remember.
Forgetting character names. I can't keep them all in my head. There's Jenny, and then I don't remember the other girl.
I also think this was a pretty good premiere movie for Rosario Dawson. I know they're kids, and they specifically chose a lot of non-actors, just a lot of kids, and they did pretty good for just being kids at making it feel real. But I did feel like some of the delivery on some of the lines was not great. But Rosario Dawson was like a standout in the cast of like delivering lines that felt real and being in a movie with a lot of people that weren't actors and actresses.
Yeah, I think I would forgive the actors in this, though, for their poor delivery, because really, when you interact with teenagers, when they talk, it sounds like they're delivering lines poorly. Like they're just trying to find their place and their voice. And so it's just like they're trying to just show off in front of their friends or something and sound tough. So that's the impression I got throughout the entire film.
Yeah.
I wasn't so sold on his sweet talking. I felt his sweet talking was written by an older person than him.
Yeah.
which it was, obviously. But it was effective in his end goal. And it was believable enough, but that's kind of the one, some of his scenes when he's seducing the girls just didn't really feel real enough.
But the girls might have been stupid enough to fall for it.
That's obviously what happens.
Yeah. I don't know. For me, it didn't necessarily ring false.
No, he's lying to them. He's telling them what they want to hear.
You're saying the content of the line?
it didn't sound like a 13-year-old.
Well, he's not 13. He was 15.
Sorry, he's 15. You know, it still didn't sound like a 15-year-old.
I think I agree. It felt a little strange. That was the opening sequence was one of them, and the other one was one of the last scenes. Yeah, it was a little bit off. I can't even pinpoint exactly what was wrong, but it didn't feel legitimate to me, really.
Yeah, I think Chloe Savini does great in this movie.
It was her first movie, too, I think.
Yeah, and I think she's strangely attractive in this movie. And I think I can say that because I think she was definitely at least 20 when she shot this movie. But
yeah, that's young enough.
Look younger than she is.
Yeah, she is strangely attractive, though. I can't figure it out.
The short hair?
I think it might be the hair. I don't know, she kind of looks like a man now, but... kind of mannish. So the opening scene of this movie with the explicit kissing that seems to go on for a day and a half.
Yeah, how uncomfortable was that?
I felt so uncomfortable watching that scene happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was the whole point. I think he's trying to make you just go, ugh, God, look at these kids. What are these kids up to? You know, making me feel like an old man.
Yeah, I think that was definitely the point, is to get us to focus on our discomfort with knowing what kids are up to.
Yeah, like, you feel uncomfortable seeing this? Well, that's what's really going on. You should be uncomfortable.
I thought their perception of gay people was interesting.
Oh,
I
yeah.
Mean, they
yeah.
call they call out the gay guys in the park, call them faggots, and I don't know what to make of that.
Yeah, I was a little bit taken aback by that, too, and didn't really know what was the point and the purpose of including that, except to show that these kids are shitheads.
Yeah, I felt like it was just kind of to show that these kids, like, the kids are our future, but, like, they're, diet, like, I don't know. There's some devolution going on here, like, and an ignorance that would be shocking. I think the idea was that they're ignorant on almost all fronts. is that they have an understanding and they're learning things about the world, but that their sense of morals is skewed in every category that you can think of almost.
I don't think they're really worried about morals at all.
No.
I mean, they're entirely super self-centered this entire movie. I mean, their objective is to get fucked up, really, and to do what they want, and they succeed. And lying is not a problem. Theft is not a problem. Bigotry is not a problem. Hatred's not a problem. You know, and yep. They're chauvinistic too. I mean, the forceful kiss in the swimming pool.
Oh yeah.
Very awkward scene.
I want to talk about the movie in relation to the topic of this episode, though. It doesn't seem if really the lead, the protagonist with no morals, really has an addiction per se. I mean, he may say that he does, but I don't know if he's really addicted to his sexual appetite or his sexual desires. I don't know. Did it seem like an addiction to you guys?
To me, I sort of saw it as the beginning of what could lead to addiction in certain circumstances. I mean, aside from the sexual exploits of the lead, you have an insane amount of substance abuse in this movie. You know, and I felt like in relation to the theme, I think they definitely show that they're becoming addicted to this. How do you feel?
I felt maybe a twinge of that with the repercussions of, I don't know, the dreadhead black kid throwing up into the toilet toward the end of, like, okay, he must have seen this coming, you know, and getting a feeling for that, but he did it anyway, you know. But it seems like just kind of reckless abandon, hedonism, more than an addiction, something they needed or something like that.
Well, I don't know. No, I mean, I think they're trying to get fucked up most of the time. They still the 40.
Yeah. Well, it still had a feeling of this is what I want, not like I need this. I need another. He said like I could use another 40. You know, the kid's just always drinking. I don't know. It's
that
addiction. But it, in contrast to like Under the Volcano, where you can see this is a character who needs this. I can get that feeling really from kids.
No,
exactly.
Yeah. I'd agree. Less of a theme, for sure.
Well, these are addicts in different stages of addiction. I mean, if you look at Albert Finney in Under the Volcano, that's the end of a long battle with addiction. Whereas with kids, what we're seeing is the seeds of developing addiction. I mean, every addict, once you go back far enough, you'll find a time in their life where they weren't an addict yet. And if you look at kids, right. I flip a coin, I'd say 70% of these kids turn out to be addicts later in their life because of the behavior they're exhibiting at the point in the film. Yeah, I mean, because they're completely uninhibited and unrestrained by any kind of parental supervision. So, I mean, the only direction they can go unless they get away from this is towards addiction.
Yeah, that might be so.
So I think on that element,
lack of education here. And reckless behavior due to lack of education.
Yeah, a lot of that.
None of them are really.
I don't believe in HIV. I think it's fake. I don't think condoms work. Like all that stuff.
Right.
Ignorant.
Right. Because they don't see or feel the consequences. Not yet, anyway. I mean, I think that's the whole point of Chloe Sevigny's character is to personify consequences. And then at the end, when Casper rapes her, it's essentially a complete disregard for consequences.
Yeah, well, I disregard for I guess you mean like Casper is disregarding any consequences he would have, because I don't think he knew that she.
I don't mean to say that he knew. I think it's a symbol for that. I think showing it is portraying their complete disregard for consequences. They don't care about tomorrow. They're consistently chasing something to alter their state of mind currently. And I think in that respect, it may be the most effective because it's showing the preliminary stages of addiction, as opposed to the other two films, where with Under the Volcano at the end and in Vonda's room, it's, you know, caught up in the middle of addiction.
Yeah, they're at your full-blown addiction when you start the story.
Hmm.
But don't take my word for it.
No, it's
watch
the
movie.
Yeah, watch the movie.
Yeah, I think all in all, capturing all three of those stages actually made this an excellent, excellent discussion.
Great episode. Good picks.
I mean, we've definitely run a little long, but I think that may be, for me anyway, the best discussion we've had, because it stayed on topic most of the time.
Yeah, we don't do that a lot.
There will be tangents, Isaac.
There will not be spoilers.
Well, cool. Oh, yeah. If we think we're done, I'm probably going to jet.
I think so.
To get involved in the discussion, you can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/3filmegos, follow us on Twitter @3filmegos, or email us at 3filmegos@gmail.com. You can also comment at 3filmegos.podomatic.com, where you can also donate and subscribe to the show. Music provided by 90s Television. You can hear more of their music on Facebook. On our next episode, movies based on graphic novels. We've been the 3 Filmegos. Thanks for listening.